Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Nearly 3 weeks ago, a group of protesters opposed to a planned redevelopment of a park in Istanbul set up shop there to make their point. Since then, the protest movement has grown into a wide-ranging cast of characters with a litany of complaints against the government, especially its prime minister. The protest has led to violent conflict between the protesters and police, and maybe now the army. Joining us now by phone from Istanbul to discuss the protests is New York Times Baghdad Bureau Chief Tim Arango. Thanks very much for joining us, Tim.
Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
Police cleared Taksimi Park on Saturday with tear gas and water cannons.
Yeah.
But the protesters returned on Sunday. What happened?
Well, on late Saturday night, the police finally raided this park, which is a portion of Taksim, in quite violent fashion with tear gas and water cannon, which fires actually not just water, but chemicals that burn the skin. And then clashes went on all night. And then yesterday, the prime minister had his own rally at one place in Istanbul with hundreds of thousands of his enthusiastic supporters. At the same time, many of the protesters were trying to return to Taksim Square during the day and were met with more tear gas and more water cannon.
Prime Minister, you mentioned the prime minister held his own rally to show support for his government. What sort of support does he really have? How does that break down?
You know, the last election, he had 50% of the electorate, and most people believe if he ran for an election today, he would win again. The other half of the country is very, very divided politically, and so there's really no viable opposition. The main supporters for him are the religious conservative masses in Turkey.
Right. Turkey is held up as a paragon of secularism in terms of its government, but is definitely an Islamic country. Are some of the protesters concerned about the prime minister's relationship with the religious?
You know, that's a part of it. I think, modern Turkey has a great history of secularism. And this party, Erdogan's, the prime minister's party, is rooted in political Islam, and they've sort of challenged that secular tradition. And I think a lot of the protesters are uncomfortable with things like the recent crackdown on alcohol consumption. And it's not maybe so much the actual limitation, because it's not banishing alcohol at all. But the prime minister even said that he's doing this because religion requires him to do so. And it's those things that I think that scare a lot of the people, who are taking part in these protests.
My guest is Tim Arango. He's New York Times Baghdad bureau chief. He's talking to us from Istanbul. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Tim, we've heard that the protests have spread to some neighborhoods in Istanbul, suggesting that efforts to quell the protests in the park have fanned them elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true. We saw a shift yesterday in some of the nature of the violence. It wasn't just protesters against police. There were actually civilian pro-government people that clashed with protesters, which, it could suggest that it's taking a new dangerous turn, but at the same time, it may just have been a one-off night, and we just have to see how things go, go on in the next days. It could be a slow burn from here.
Has anybody been seriously hurt or killed yet?
Yes, there's been three or four deaths over the last 4 months. I mean, for three to four weeks. Mm-hmm. Thousands injured from the tear gas.
And we heard that medical personnel who have been on hand to help protesters who are hurt by the tear gas and maybe the water cannons and so forth are being held back and being told not to.
Yeah, there's been sort of this wide-ranging crackdown on not just the protesters, but all sort of connected elements, if you will, the media that's reporting on it, lawyers that support the protesters. They sort of staged their own rally at one of the courthouses and were detained last week. And then medical personnel. And it's unclear if they're actually doctors or if they're just medical students or if they're just medics, but people treating you know, they're wearing white coats and they're treating some of the injuries. And I saw some of these the other night during the crackdown on Saturday night. So it's this wide-ranging sort of effort by the government to really, really crack down on all elements of this.
And now I understand that they're thinking about bringing the army in, which is different than the police. It's the government one way or the other, but what's the distinction?
Well, on Saturday night, there were a lot of sightings of these green, I think they're green, gendarmerie trucks, which are army, military, police. And that raised a lot of sort of fears among people that the army was intervening. But the army has an interesting history here. If the government calls in the army to help them, that actually suggests that the government has control over the army, because there's such a, in Turkey, there's a great history of military coups. And until this prime minister and this government, the military actually in many ways was supreme to civilian leadership. But one of the things this government has done is go after the military and really put the military under civilian control. So one sort of analysis of that, if you will, of if the army comes out on the streets to help secure the streets, it shows that the army is under civilian control rather than intervening on behalf of the protesters as we...
Tim Orango, are you there? It looks like we lost Tim Orango, New York Times Baghdad bureau chief. Lucky to have him at all. He was talking to us from Istanbul. If you have any questions or comments, we're going to continue the conversation about Turkey. We'd love to hear from... Tim, are you there? Tim? Okay. I'm going to see if we can get him back. Nope. Anyways, we'd like to hear from Turkish people who may live in central Ohio, whether you're here for education, whether you've moved here with family. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. We are trying to get Tim Orango back. He's the bureau chief, the Baghdad bureau chief, though, of the New York Times. You've probably read him many times in the New York Times in recent years, but now we're talking about the protests in Turkey, which continue. We will be continuing the conversation through the rest of the hour coming up with Richard Herman, chair of the Department of Political Science at OSU, and also Irani Az. He's of the Turkish American Society of Ohio. So if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you're a member of the Turkish American community in Central Ohio, give us a call and share your thoughts and feelings about the recent protests, the ongoing protests in Istanbul, 614-292-8513. Nearly 3 weeks ago, once again, a group of protesters opposed to the planned development or redevelopment of a park in Istanbul set up a protest there to make their points to oppose that redevelopment. There apparently is not a lot of park space in Istanbul. Since then, the protest movement has grown into a wide-ranging cast of complaints, a litany of complaints against the government, especially its prime minister. And it has led to violent conflict between the protesters and the authorities. The prime minister has said that if it doesn't settle down soon, he will call in the army. Tim Orango of the New York Times was just explaining the separation of the army from the civilian government, and that was has long been the way it works. Things have been changing in Turkey, however. Recently, he said the civilian government in control now has worked to also get control of the military. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. Once again, Richard Herman, chair of the Department of Political Science, will join us soon. As will Irani Az. He's of the Turkish American Society of Ohio. If you have a question or comment for either of them, you can get queued up. There are no callers right now, and I don't have any emails, so give us a call. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. In his latest article. It was published yesterday in the New York Times. Tim Arango said that after an intense night of street clashes that represented the worst violence in nearly 3 weeks of protests, Mr. Erdogan, that's the prime minister, rallied hundreds of thousands of his supporters on Sunday, many of them traveling on city buses and ferries that the government had mobilized for the event at an outdoor arena on the shores of the Sea of Marmara. In some of his toughest language yet, he called his opponents terrorists and made clear that any hope of compromise to the end of the crisis was gone. Well, I think that we're not going to be able to get Tim Arango from the New York Times back at this point, but we certainly do thank him for joining us today. With me in the studio now, Richard Herman. He's chair of the Department of Political Science at OSU. Welcome to the show.
Ian, it's good to be here.
The prime minister is now saying that, according to the New York Times, he's calling his opponents in the park terrorists, and that has made clear that any hope of a compromise to end the crisis is gone.
Mm-hmm. I think that's unfortunate. And as we're hearing from Istanbul directly, I think this crisis is starting to, or this conflict is starting to show it's much deeper than just a crisis about the park. It's, I think, being influenced by other big forces moving across the Middle East. As you were just starting into a discussion, the secular and religious divisions in Turkey have been longstanding. It's been under the last 10 years of Erdogan that the Islamist and more religious elements have been more in power and have contained the military and the more secular nationalist movements. I think what we're seeing now is the beginning, or maybe not just the beginning, but a reemergence of people who are more secular, are less comfortable with the highly religious nature of the regime and the kind of authoritarian control that it's been starting to show, even though it's a democratically elected government. And that this, I think, is influenced by a shift that you see in Syria and Iraq and all across the Middle East, a collapse of what were secular national governments, usually led by the military.
Elected or not.
Elected or not. And the rise of Islamic and religious movements and the sectarianism that's involved in that. Obviously, the prime minister's party in Turkey has been deeply involved in Syria over the last 2 years, supportive of the religious movements there that are trying to overthrow Assad, who is, of course, a military, not himself, but his father. And that regime is based in the military and in secular Arab nationalism.
A lot of the protesters, when I've been listening to the reports over the last 3 weeks, when you hear interviews with them, they're educated, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're psychologists, they're students. They are if it's not about the park and it is about the government, they are protesting this move toward religion.
Yes. I mean, I am in Turkey from time to time with political scientists, usually people at various universities. They tend to be more liberal, more cosmopolitan, more nationalist in some ways, less religious. And they've been very uncomfortable with Erdogan. They dislike him enormously. I think it's easy for Americans who would be in the center to the more liberal side of the American political spectrum. Just imagine if an extremely religious person were elected to be president of the United States or prime minister and then started moving the country very sharply in the direction of the practices of the religion. It split the country.
And then just as an point that Tim Arango from the New York Times made, because there is a history of coups, military coups in Turkey, one of the things they did was try to make the military very separate from the civilian government.
Yes, I think the real history here is that when the Turkish national movement emerged from the Ottoman Empire, it emerged as an effort to try to combine people who were of various different religions and various different ethnic communities into one Turkish people. And these national movements occurred all over the Middle East. The Arab movement was the same. It was trying to join Sunni and Shia and Christian and Druze into one community, we'd call it Arab in the Arab world or Turkish in the Turkish world. And the national movements were seen in the United States as progressive and positive historical development, sort of bridging over these ethnic and religious differences. Turkish nationalism held for a long time. The military was its protector until, frankly, just 10 years ago. And so it's not just a history of coups. It's a history of the military as the defender of the national bases of the nation of Turkey, which was coming out of the heritage of the Ottoman Empire. And we saw very similar things in the Arab world. The protectors of that national movement were often militaries that weren't elected, or they were elected but in not very democratic process. And that was true in Egypt. It was true in Syria. The only place where we still have one of those secular national movements that try to unite across differences is Assad in Syria. And you can see Erdogan's at war with him to try to bring the last one of those down and end that, what they're seeing as a failed effort to build secular national movements. And we've seen in the last 10 years very clearly the rise of religious alternatives, which was always the alternative, and the opponent of this national movement was always the religious groups. And what we're seeing in Turkey, and we've seen it earlier 2 years ago in Egypt, and we're seeing it in Syria now, is the long-term struggle of these religious groups to try to fight back against that secular national effort.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My guest, Richard Herman, chair of the Department of Political Science, will continue our conversation with him about what's going on in Turkey when we return. Again, All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Member contributions are the largest source of funding for 89.7 NPR News. Your support provides for the highest quality news and information. Our fiscal year ends on June 30th, and we still have about $50,000 to raise. You can help us meet our annual goal by giving at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678. And thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Homeport Noble on Long condominiums, offering home ownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long.
Checking the weather forecast briefly. High today about 84 degrees, mostly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers. Tomorrow's high about 80. Right now we have 74 degrees at our studios here on the OSU campus.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Prime Minister of Turkey tried to make a deal with the protesters who first got a foothold in Takim Square about 3 weeks ago, according to NPR's Peter Kenyon.
He had offered an olive branch to protest organizers, pledging to wait for a court ruling and a referendum before developing Gezi Park. When the diverse and essentially leaderless group of protesters rejected the offer, Erdogan made it clear that he was done with reaching out.
Taksim Meydan, evet. Boşaldı, boşaldı.
Taksim Square must be empty. If it is emptied, okay, said Erdogan, adding that if it is not emptied, the security forces will know how to empty it.
Indeed, government forces have emptied the square, but protesters continue to return. What's more, the protests appear to be spreading. Joining us now to catch up on political affairs once again in Turkey and the government of Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan is Richard Herman. He's professor and chair of the Ohio State University Department of Political Science and former director of the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at OSU. And once again, Richard, thanks for jumping in and helping us out today.
It's good to be here.
This, when you're talking about bringing in the army and Tim Erangel from The New York Times and I were talking about it just before he was cut off, talking about bringing in the army, that changes everything, doesn't it?
Well, it's early to see, to tell. As Tim was saying, Erdogan might be a bit reluctant to call on the army, given the history of the army's support for more secular movements and for the national movements I've been describing. On the other hand, over the last several years, it's looked as if the prime minister and his party are now in control of the military, at least the military is willing to abide by civilian control. What's hard to tell is how broad-based the support is for the people in Takim Square. It could be that it's like the Occupy Wall Street movement. It's highly educated, sort of left-leaning young people who are there for the summertime and don't have a mass base or strong base outside of their small group. They're arguing, beginning on a kind of a green argument that they want more park space and they don't like the corporate development of these shopping malls that they see proliferating everywhere and that they think somehow are connected, not just somehow, but are connected to Erdogan and his party. What I can't judge, and we haven't seen because there hasn't been a very recent election, is what kind of broad base of support they have beyond that. I think in the short run, if this were, you know, in any democratic country and you had a group occupying space, unwilling to move against it, eventually the police would move them along. Although you can see, you know, people let Occupy Wall Street go on for a very long time. We didn't send in the National Guard right away.
And that spread across the country as well.
Yeah, but it didn't have, you know, big lasting impact on the nature of the political system. It just was one of those things that went on last summer, a year before. Mm-hmm. And I think Erdogan could have allowed some of that. He just, of course, as I've been mentioning, I think many of the currents in Turkey we're seeing are washing over from Syria, Iraq, Egypt, the whole Arab Spring, even though Erdogan has not seized power the way the regimes in those other countries have. Some of the secular versus religious dynamics that we see in Syria, that we see very clearly in Egypt, and the sectarian divisions that we've seen in Iraq and Syria, I think are having their impact on Turkish politics, too.
We have an email from Julia. She says a Turkish professor friend who was recently in Istanbul and is well informed about the protests there wrote her impressions of events. She found that in Gezi Park, there was the beginning of a peaceful protest with people helping each other, sharing, singing, designing a bookstore, cafeteria, etc. Then the cleaning up campaign of a week ago hit people very hard. In her view now, the big problem is not just the violence that is shown on television, but that the police were using chemicals in lieu of tear gas and with the water in the water cannon. She states it is truly terrifying. Julia asks, have your guests also heard this report? And Tim Arango of The New York Times did say that they have heard that there was something but more than just water being sprayed from the water cannons. So
I don't know, but that I read Tim's story over the weekend in The New York Times as he described Gezi Park being cleared. And it looked as if, you know, armored personnel carriers and other kind of bulldozers arrived. Most of the people had now left because they kept telling them we're coming in and going to do this. And they went in and cleaned up what was left of the tents and this and that. But apparently, according to Tim just a few minutes ago, people came back on Sunday to some small degree. But as I say, I don't think the people in Gezi Park are going to be at the center of this forever. I mean, if they're just the tip of an iceberg, then this will be a big story for a long time. If they're just all by themselves, as I say, and they were not supported more strongly than, say, the Wall Street movement here in the United States was, I mean, it's less than, I don't know what percent, you could probably doesn't even amount to 1%, then they don't have any real base, and Erdogan will simply move along, and this will be a footnote of June 2013. My own sense is it might be the beginning of currents that are much bigger than that, as I've been saying.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And with me in the studio, Richard Herman, chair of the Department of Political Science at Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Before we go to a couple callers, is it possible? Some people have said that the media is overblowing this, which makes me think about the Occupy movement. And there was a lot of media coverage. There were a lot of stories that came out of the Occupy movement. Whether it has any lasting impact is, debatable. But most people might agree that it really doesn't. But there still was a lot of media coverage. Could the same thing be happening in Istanbul? What's your sense about that?
It could be. It could be that a few years ago, when we saw what happened in Tahrir Square in Egypt, people think this is that. I don't think this is the same as the popular movement against Mubarak. Mubarak's regime was a dictatorship, and it was a military regime that didn't have strong base of support in society. Erdogan has a strong base of support. He's elected. I think by most people's account, he would win an election again.
He's been there 10 years.
He's been there 10 years. Mm-hmm. I think he would win another election if it was held tomorrow. And that's not the issue. The issue is how deeply polarized is the country. And I think as we watch Syria next door dissolve into civil war, could some of those same fault lines that are pushing Syria into civil war that are already divided Egypt very badly? My experience in Turkey the last few years is that there is a big gap between the secular, intellectual, more cosmopolitan crowd who have been in charge of Turkey for a long time prior to Erdogan, and they don't like him at all, and they find his regime enormously oppressive, not in a dictatorial sense, but in a social sense. And so there could be a lot of opposition to him.
Vernon in Mount Vernon, it's not a joke. Welcome to the show, Vernon. Hi, you're on the air, Vernon.
Yes, I'd like to say that I think that this is the largest crisis that Turkey has seen in quite some time. The protesters in Gezi Park may have been the spark that ignited this. But from what I'm hearing from my in-laws in Turkey, and my in-laws have a wide range of political viewpoints in their family, from people on the far right, sort of center-leftist, to people who are more radical, that this has spread to be a broad-based movement across the country. And even though the AKP, the party of Erdogan, has tried to paint this as religious people versus secular fundamentalists, when people have actually interviewed the protesters, this has been about a response to authoritarianism. It's been about a response to police brutality. It's been about a response to press censorship. You know, we talk about whether the press overblew this whole thing. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, one of the problems people had was the press didn't even cover it. CNN Turk instead was showing a documentary on penguins. There was a sense that there was this antagonism arising against the growing authoritarianism of the government, and nobody was paying attention. There have been peaceful demonstrations all throughout Turkey, and the reports that I'm getting from, you know, basically middle-class suburbs in Ankara is that these are broad-based. There's shopkeepers, there's bureaucrats, there's people in headscarves. Erdogan has behaved in a way that is particularly authoritarian, and it has polarized the country right down the middle, and I'm very actually concerned about what happens next.
Okay. Vernon, thank you so much for your call. Rick Herman?
As I say, I'm not at all in big disagreement with Vernon. I tend to see and hear very similar things. I don't know, because only time will tell how deep and wide this support is. Certainly, people I talk with share many of the same sentiments that Vernon was describing, and I just don't know how big their base of support is. Sometimes people believe their base of support is huge because everyone around them and all their friends are saying that and thinking that. But in fact, they're quite a small minority. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. I think, as I say, I'll be watching closely and we'll just have to wait and see. Certainly, historically, the fault lines here are deep and there'd be a lot of support for the opposition to Erdogan.
Vernon, thank you so much for your call and best to your relatives in Turkey. We have an email from Charlotte, wants to know what exactly are our mutual defense obligations to Turkey through NATO or other treaties. So Turkey's been held up as a paragon in this country for a long time. And look at, they can make it work in Turkey. They can be an Islamist country, but still have a secular government and everybody's happy and working. Now it's not so much. What are our obligations?
Turkey's been a NATO ally for a very long time. And Turkey was a strong American ally even when it wasn't a democracy and when it was ruled by the military. It was still a strong American ally in NATO. In the last 10 years, as the more religious party has won these elections and the military has not stepped in to stop them or take over in power, it's continued to have a good relationship with the United States. We do not have defense obligations to protect a regime against its own people. If Turkey were being attacked by a foreign enemy, if it became clear that the opposition truly were terrorists being infiltrated from, I don't know where, Al-Qaeda, Iraq or something, or Russia, then yes, we would have a mutual defense obligation. Turkey has a very large military it could defend itself, and NATO doesn't include a sort of a we intervene to protect the regime against a democratic change or even civil disobedience, as we're seeing here, or even violent disobedience. That would be up for the government itself to protect itself.
614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. Rick Herman, how's the government there set up exactly? What are the checks and balances? How does it work?
Well, it's a parliamentary system, and they have elections. The party that has the largest number of seats and gets a majority in the parliament gets to name the prime minister. The party that has been winning is the one that Erdogan leads. It leans more towards the religious right. It has moved, and of course, in Turkey's, well, it was traditionally fairly polarized between the secular military-oriented group and the religious group. Erdogan's group has been seen as more religious, very much more religious than what came before it. But it's pretty much a straight parliamentary system.
So you said so. If
and if any time, by the way, Erdogan's party didn't have a majority in the parliament, he'd be out.
What kind of majority does he have? Do they go by just simple majority or
yes.
Okay? So is it a solid simple majority?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a very narrow one.
How often do they have elections?
I'm not sure. I think every 4 years.
Okay. He's been in power for 10 years now.
Yes, he's won. Not one time. I mean, he's won
multiple
continuing elections.
Is that typical or is that unusual? Are leaders in power for a long time?
The electoral process repeating itself over and over has been unusual because when Turkey would have popular governments very often elected, the military from time to time stepped in a coup if they didn't like the direction those civilian leaders were taking them. And so through much of the 70s and 80s, you had a history of military intervention to short-circuit civilian government. And the civilian governments were deeply divided among themselves. The parties were highly fractionized. And so you had unstable coalitions, people fighting with one another, and then the military from time to time just stepping in to say, forget this, we're not going to continue with this kind of bickering. And much of the time during the Cold War, the United States was happy with that. Happy is the wrong word. It was willing to support that because it wanted a stable government in Istanbul, in Ankara, that would be a stable member of NATO.
I was talking with Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman last week. He just returned from a trip to Turkey. And he said that some of the protesters back when it first started or when it was starting to erupt, they came up to him and said, how many parks do you have in Columbus? He said, which is the oddest thing. He wasn't expecting it at all. But they were concerned about the lack of green space in Istanbul and other parts of the country that it was getting turning too many. It sounded like a Joni Mitchell song or something, that they're just putting up too many parking lots, too many shopping centers, too many factories.
I think that was the trigger, as I think Vernon a few minutes ago said. It began, as I said earlier, with protests along a green dimension, right? That they didn't like the shopping malls, they didn't like the cement and concrete. And Istanbul is a crowded city. Anyone who's been there knows that. It's a big city. But I also agree with Vernon in the sense that I think it's changing. I think the government's reaction to those protests, which I think were deeper than just we want green space. I think they were pointing to their perceived corruption and authoritarian decision style of a government with a bare majority making these shopping malls and many other economic deals. But I think underneath more of that, there are many other things. They don't like the way they interfere in the educational system. They don't like the way they interfere in personal life, on social issues, and all kinds of other religious versus secular dimensions. We'll only see now, though, whether this crackdown, Erdogan's inclination to call these people terrorists.
That's a strong word.
This is very polarizing language.
Yeah.
It's not, whatever people thought of the people on Wall Street, no one was calling them terrorists, foreign saboteurs. That's language of a civil war. That's language of they have no legitimate standings and we can go ahead and kill them and arrest them. And that will only time will tell. But I suspect will be very polarizing, as will bringing in forces and killing some people to clear out a park, by a certain date and time. Who cares? At one level, what would have mattered if they'd stayed there another 3 days?
And by bringing in the military, very telling about whether there's still that separation that...
Well, I don't know why he would need the military to suppress his own protesters. I mean, I haven't seen protests. The pictures I've seen, and of course I'm not there like Tim is, I haven't seen the numbers of people that would require military presence on the street. It's not like we saw in Tahrir Square. If it becomes that, well, then I think, as Vernon was saying earlier, and I've been saying throughout, this is turning into something much deeper and much deeper fault lines. And it could, because I think, as I keep saying, the civil war next door in Syria and Erdogan's deep involvement in that, and along with his deep involvement with governments in Qatar and Saudi Arabia and in Egypt, has made Turkey not a secular, but becoming sort of a linchpin of the new Sunni emergence of religious power across the Middle East, with an alliance maybe between the Muslim Brothers in Egypt and Turkey and Saudi Arabia to overthrow The one last secular regime that happens to be Alawite-based in Syria. And I think a lot of Turks could be very uncomfortable seeing their government starting to play that role. And if the Middle East shifts in this direction, where governments are now defined by how Sunni and how religious they are, and that becomes the defining characteristics of what Turkey's going to be, that'll make many Turks very uncomfortable.
My guest is Richard Herman, chair of the Department of Political Science at Ohio State University. He'll stay with us. And coming up, Irani Az, he's from the Turkish American Society of Ohio. So stay with us. We'll continue the conversation about what's going on in Turkey when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Washington's new pledge to Syria, more military aid to the rebels. We'll look at what aid and what it may mean. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point coming your way starting at 1 o'clock this afternoon at 89.7 NPR News. Coming up next hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher, Ann's guest will be author and theologian Jim Wallace. He'll discuss how political and religious views get in the way of the common good. That's coming up in hour number two of this Monday edition of All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
In the weather forecast for Central Ohio today, partly sunny for most of the day and a high of about 84 degrees is expected. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after about 11 p.m. The overnight low will be 66. On Tuesday, partly sunny, a chance of showers tomorrow, maybe even some thunderstorms, and a high of 80 degrees. By Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms continues, and a low of 58. By Wednesday, they say, mostly sunny at a high of 81. Right now at our studios here on the OSU campus, we have 74 degrees.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. NPR's Peter Kenyon yesterday pondered the current state of affairs in the city of Istanbul, where protesters for some 3 weeks have occupied a downtown park planned for redevelopment.
Another protester, Marty Bukozda, voiced a common reaction, saying if Erdogan thought this show of force would end things, he hasn't been paying attention for the past 2.5 weeks.
Exactly. That's what I was telling to all the other people. We're going to come back since the beginning. We did. I mean, they kicked us out. I don't remember even how many times. They keep on kicking us out. We keep on coming back and just building our lives back.
Overnight, police deployed in several neighborhoods, repulsing attempts by new waves of people to join the demonstration. Turkey's EU minister urged all citizens to return home and warned that the state will consider anyone remaining in Gezi Park, quote, a member of a terror organization, a designation that carries severe penalties under Turkey's sweeping anti-terror laws. But for many here, the question now is how the government will keep the park clear of protesters without turning the heart of modern Istanbul into a closed security zone.
Still with us is Richard Herman. He's professor and chair of the Ohio State University Department of Political Science and former director of the Mershon Center for International Security Studies at OSU. And joining us now is Irani Az,
yes,
a retired professor of aerospace engineering at OSU, who is an advisor to and board member of the Turkish American Society of Ohio, which has branches in Columbus, Dayton, Toledo, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. The protest, obviously, we've been talking about it, expanded in the number of topics and multiplied in the number of people and did so very quickly. Can we talk at all about the pent-up frustration there? Was this surprising to you? Was something building, in your opinion?
And if I may just add up, I'm also a member of the Turkish American Society of Central Ohio, and I've been its past president for a number of terms in the past. So there's a degree of frustration by the so-called, although I do not like to put it that way, the more secularist-minded people because Erdogan has been winning, or his party has been winning, every election, general elections, municipal elections. There have been national referenda on a number of issues, like giving the power to elect president by the people, and also constitutional reforms. So continuously not being able to succeed at the polls in terms of the opposition parties probably generated some frustration. That's one fact. Erdogan also might have some, does have, I think, some blame to some wrongdoings, some responsibility in this. Although I do not like this division between the secularist and the Islamist type of talk, because I think in the Western media, that sounds interesting. Looking at the other countries in the region, that attracts attention. I do not know whether the Western media sort of is caught by the degree of intensity of some of these pictures that come out of there. I think that is true. There's some misinformation coming out of the country due to that. The prime minister has been, I would say, insensitive more lately to the concerns of these more secularist-minded people or people who are voting for the opposition party. He is getting criticism also probably from his advisors and party members, etc., to that end. So he keeps open channels. He does look authoritarian on in attitude. That is true. My take is, and also the information, I have also a lot of close friends, not only friends, but people that I know that have access to various offices in the country. AKP party and Erdogan, they are analyzing the situation, and they will respond, actually, my guess is, with some more democratic reforms. Sort of might be a leap rather than small steps. So whether the situation may escalate more or not, I probably do not think so, but the concerns of the more secularist-minded section of the society, they must be addressed. How that will happen, we are to see. But there will be some sort of a response that will probably attenuate some of these kind of tensions. I might also add that all these concerns about whether Turkey's, let's say, the infringement upon the personal freedoms is a matter of perception, in other words. No one can point out solid moves that actually would infringe upon the way the people dress or the way places they go.
What about the limits on alcohol consumption and that sort of thing?
The limits on alcohol consumption, they're pretty much in line with what exists in the Western societies. When these things were talked about, Prime Minister, for example, said that they are doing this for health reasons because it causes a lot of burden on the health system, health insurance system, as well as the traffic accidents and so on and so forth. He did add the sort of the religious one reason to it. In other words, this is also in line with some religious...
Right, and when we usually hear about Turkey, it is put up on a pedestal as a nation that separates its religion from its secular government.
Right. So that probably was a mistake, at least a political mistake. I mean, everyone knows that, you know, it's also against the religion. So he did not need to make such comments. So there are small mistakes that he has done. He's a very outspoken man because of his nature, because of the neighborhood that he grew in. So he does make certain comments that offend people. In fact, even I take criticism with them and I try to convey my thoughts or whatever in any way. So... overall, if I should go back, I think Turkish democracy is a sound one. It has its problems, though, and the problems are for everyone to share. It's not just the government. For example, let me give you some recent polls, actually, that came out. when you look at the cross-section of the crowd, it looks like there are people from all cross-sections of the Turkish society. The way they look, that is true. Recent polls that were conducted at the Gezi Park state that 76% of the protesters, let me sort of go back a little bit here. We have to distinguish between the peaceful protesters and the protesters who are using violence, who have used vandalism in the street, damaged the surrounding. They are a minority. Mm-hmm. But it's nowadays that's that minority group that you see. These are mainly leftist, communist, Marxist, Leninist
How
ideology.
How do you know that?
Because I am 61 years old. I remember what has been going on as far as the progress of democracy in Turkey is concerned since the mid-50s. The 1970s were very violent.
But how do we know that those are the elements that are at the protest now?
Because there's information. You look at the parties, the flags that are being paraded in the streets mm-hmm. at Taksim Square. These parties, there are 70 parties that can participate in the elections in Turkey. Communist parties are legal. They are allowed. Mm-hmm. What is not allowed is to accomplish revolution or to overthrow governments for the sake of communist ideology by force, by using force and violence.
Okay. So you're saying that the ones that are getting out of hand tend to be those.
Basically, those are the people now the police are tackling with. On Saturday at the Gezi Park, Prime Minister asked, before that, the governor of Istanbul asked a few times, many times, I think, to ask the peaceful protesters to leave. There's also dynamics in the park. If you want to leave, probably some people could not leave because there were 120 NGOs at the park represented. They tried to have a sort of a town hall meeting mm-hmm. as to whether we should leave the park or not. So it's interesting. Some dynamics, some stories will come out of the park, and they are coming out. But the point is, they asked the peaceful protesters leave. And actually, at Saturday, before the police took action at the park, there were close to about 1,000 people left because they said, peaceful protesters leave. And most of them did leave the park. And the peak crowd at the park was 5,000. So about 1,000 are left because even the prime minister said, the rest we will regard them as, you know, whatever of these sections or factions. And then the police will tackle them. There were 200 tents left, about 1,000 people left. So police basically acted on those people. Most of the peaceful protesters had left already.
Rick Herman, as far as the number of parties, political parties at work in Turkey, that's a lot compared to the United States.
It is a lot. And there are factions much farther to the left there than here and much farther to the right than there than here. So it is a much broader and more diverse sort of political spectrum. I agree with that. And as I said earlier, I don't know whether the movement in the park is as narrowly based as our colleague is describing, or much broader. I think, as I've said throughout, time will tell. If it's a very narrow group only around left-wing communists, then it'll disappear fairly mm-hmm. quickly because those parties have had very little influence in Turkey for a very long time. And if that's all this is, then this will disappear overnight. If it's not, if it's much broader the base, the way Vernon was describing and the way I tend to suspect, then this is going to continue and Erdogan won't be able to so easily make this go away.
Oh, let's hear from Dennis and Marion. Okay. Dennis, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You wanted to talk about the Kurdish minority.
Yes. I was disturbed by how the Kurds have been mistreated. I don't know if there's any sympathy for them, but during the Iraq War, it became very clear that Turkish government was anxious about maybe secession of parts of territories that belonged to the Kurds in Turkey being taken over by the Kurds or wanting to reclaim that. I just wonder, is that an issue? Is anybody thinking about that or talking about it? Okay. Or is it possible that could happen?
Iranias, any thoughts about that?
Yeah, there are various undercurrents, actually, in these events. In other words, when you look at them, even the peaceful crowd that were gathered at the park, a majority of them are against the peace process that had been started by the government. With the Kurds, right. Erdogan actually, or the AKP party, is saying Erdogan has recognized the Kurdish identity a long time ago. So he's following this peace process. In other words, the armed struggles in the southeastern or eastern Turkey have ceased for about 6 months. This has been primarily because of the efforts of the government. Erdogan himself said, if you give me a poison drink, I will drink it, and to bring this peace and make sure that we get along with the Kurdish people. There is no distinction between them. They have to have their human rights realized, and he has introduced many reforms to that end. So a lot of so-called ultra-nationalists that are also within the main opposition party, there's a segment of them basically nested in that party, I believe. Okay. And they are not really ultra-nationalists, but probably they have more radical views as to the use of violence, for example. They are against this kind of a movement. So if this is disrupted, they will be also disrupting these peace efforts, and that would cause more turmoil in Turkey, and that would play together with some of the things that Dr. Herman is mentioning about. So the whole process actually is sort of a clinique, I think, in a number of ways to analyze.
We have just about 30 seconds left. Rick Herman?
The government has made important progress in negotiating with the Kurds, and I do think in the last 6 to 10 months there has been real headway made in trying to find a new approach to peace with the Kurds, and I think that that's on track. What I haven't heard from the protesters in Gezi Park is any mention of the Kurdish issue. This is the first I've heard of that.
Yeah, exactly. I hadn't heard it either. But
there was 10, according to the polls, 13.5% of the protesters at Gezi Park were the separatist Kurds.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well, Rick Herman, I know you're headed to the Middle East in July,
yes,
including Turkey.
Right now, mostly Israel, but I may stop in Istanbul.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope to hear from you if you do. And thanks a lot for helping us out today.
I'll be there in a few days, too.
Then we'll like to hear from you as well. Hi, Ronnie Oz, the Turkish American Society of Central Ohio. Thanks for joining us. Sure. Thanks for listening. This is All Side with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, an untold story from World War II. Thousands of American soldiers deserted the front lines. Journalist Charles Glass says most served bravely in combat before leaving their units.
Those soldiers who fought continuously and were never rotated out of the front lines simply were under so much pressure for so long that they cracked.
Glass's book is The Deserters. Join us.